Welcome to Revolutionize Your Retirement Radio, bringing you insights and strategies to help you create a magnificent and fulfilling second half of life. Here's your host, certified professional retirement coach and best-selling author, Dr. Dorian Mincer.
I want to welcome everybody to my Revolutionize Retirement Fourth Tuesday Interview with Expert series. I'm Dori Mincer. I'm owner and president of Revolutionize Retirement. I want to tell you a little about my guest, Bob Motter. So let me tell you a little about Bob. For 32 years, Bob was a financial advisor to hundreds of families in Connecticut, and he became a registered investment advisor in 1982. He achieved the designation of certified financial planner in 1987. In addition, he was a chartered life underwriter and chartered financial consultant. He became certified in long-term care in 2005. He retired at the end of 2009 and sold his practice. And for the last 10 years, of his practice, he was the CEO of KR Wealth Management in Farmington, Connecticut. He specialized in retirement income planning, long-term care planning, and investment management. His first book was written in 2008, and it was entitled Can We Talk? A Financial Guide for Baby Boomers Assisting Their Elderly Parents. And he just completed a second book, Passing the Torch, Critical Conversations with Your Adult Children. I first learned of Bob, actually, through his first book. I teach in a gerontology certificate program, and I've actually used that book for the students that I have, and many have found it very helpful for their own parents, as well as just being aware of some of these issues when they're working with elderly patients. So that's how I learned of him, and then there have been many connections along the way. Jan Hively, a dear friend of mine who many of you know and have heard her speak, actually let me know that Bob lived down on the Cape now, and he's been very involved in all of the activities down at the Cape. Since Bob's retired, he's been speaking to groups throughout New England regarding the importance of creating a dialogue between seniors and their adult children about the critical issues related to aging. He's been interviewed on NPR and other radio stations, as well as appearing in the press numerous times. And his books can be purchased through Amazon. And I wondered if you could talk a little about, I think before we start talking about the books, I just wondered, since you've had such a long-term experience as a financial planner, what would you say is the kind of the number one issue that you see that clients face as they age? I wonder if we can start with.
As a matter of fact, it was the reason I wrote my first book, was discovering the difficulties that aging clients had in communicating their wants and needs to their adult children. There was constantly problems within families that didn't talk to each other. And I saw this happen over and over again in my practice. And I knew I had to do something about it, but I wasn't sure exactly what I could do. But it was an issue that came up over and over again as I met with clients. I would see families just torn apart after parents had passed away when they didn't know what to do or how to handle things that had been their parents for many years. So it was something that bothered me for a long time. And that was the primary reason that I decided to write the book and deal with all those clients that I had.
That sounds extremely important. And I see this happen a lot. Sometimes from my own clients, I hear when it's the elderly parent or the older parent, let's put it that way, say that I want to talk about it and my kids don't want to talk about it. Or the kids say, I don't want to talk about that with you. Kids ask the parents and the parents say, what are you talking about? I'm not going anywhere for a while. We don't need to talk about
this. This is always the problem. It comes from both directions. I remember when I tried to start to lay out my plans with my daughter, the first thing she said to me was, Dad, you're fine. You're healthy. We don't need to talk about that now. And it happens, too, with older folks who want to start to share their needs and their wants with their children. But the children don't want to hear it because that means that their parents are mortal, that someday they're not going to be around. And that creates a real difficulty in opening lines of communication. So it's not easy to do, but what I suggest often when you're dealing with older clients, you start by talking to them about their legacy and how they want to be remembered. I think this is one of the, there's two issues that become extremely important to us as we get older. The first of those is how we maintain control of our lives and stay in control of what's happening to us. And the second is how we want to be remembered by our children and grandchildren. The great way to open the conversation with your older parents is to start talking to them about what's been important to them in their lives and how they want to be remembered and what they've learned from their experience. And that will open up the conversation, which can lead to a lot of other things.
Do you generally do find that will open the conversation if it's around the legacy issue? Yeah.
When you start talking to them about family history and their family, and one of the great questions that I like is, how did you and mom or you and dad meet? And start mm-hmm. right there and just sit mm-hmm. back and listen. And it opens up a huge opportunity for conversation.
But what if it's the opposite direction and you want to talk with your adult children? I do want to comment, because I know you and I spoke about this on the phone, that you know some people listening to the call may not have adult children or may not have children,
right.
may not have grandchildren. And we were saying that the conversation really needs to be with whoever's important in your life.
Yes, yeah, exactly. It doesn't necessarily mean it's your children. If you right. do not have children or do not have a relationship, you need to communicate with those people in your life that are important to you. One of the ways that I found of opening the conversation, there's two ways, actually. There is a movement and an organization called the Conversation Project,
right.
started by Ellen Goodman out of Boston when she discovered that she had such a terrible relationship with her mother as her mother was passing, because her mother had Alzheimer's and never really shared with her how she wanted to be treated at the end of her life. And Ellen didn't know what to do. And so she discussed with a number of people, what is the way to have, quote unquote, a good death? And it's to communicate and to talk to your family about what you need and what you want. So I found that particular website, theconversationproject.com, is a great, conversationproject.org is a great tool.
Yeah.
The first time that I opened it up, if you go to the website and you open it up the first time, the first thing that comes up on the screen is, have you had the conversation yet?
Mm-hmm.
It asks you right up front,
yeah.
bluntly.
Yeah.
And when I opened it up for the first time, I hadn't talked to my daughter about what my end-of-life plans were. And I was about to speak to a financial planning group in Tampa, Florida, and I realized that, gee, how can I advise these people to talk to their families if I haven't even talked to my own family? The first thing I did was to complete a form called the 5 Wishes, which mm-hmm. I think is a brilliant tool to help people put together their thoughts and ideas about how they wanted to be treated if they're seriously ill. I wrote that out and answered all the questions, and I shared it with my daughter. And I said, I want you to take a look at this and tell me what you think of it. It was probably the easiest way to open the conversation, was to give her that 5 Wishes document and give her the chance to read it, and then we could talk about it. I think that worked out really well for me. And I think in any family it can work out well, because it's a great way to start the conversation. If, in fact, you need to have a talk with your elderly parents, you fill out the 5 wishes for yourself, and then you hand it over to mom or dad and say, this is the plans I've had for myself. I'd like you to take a look at them and let me know what you think. And that will open it up with them, and so that you can then pass the 5 wishes on to them for them to fill out. So it's a great way to open it up in that direction as well.
Yeah, no, I think it does sound like in both directions. I had the experience,
yeah.
I think I mentioned to you when we spoke on the phone, that has always helped me advise clients that I work with, because when my father, this was a long time ago, 20 5 years ago now, but he knew he was dying, and my brother and I were both out west visiting, and we had that conversation. And my father just said, I want us to all sit down together and talk about this. And my brother did not want to, and I said, no, we really need to. And it was so helpful to be able to hear their wishes, to talk about it, to find out. We'll get on to some of the things about finding out what the accounts were, and it really helped. It helped us around his death, but then also, since I was the healthcare proxy for my mother, it really helped me know what she wanted at the time of her death. So I just know from personal experience how important it is, and how and it really does help you feel closer. And it's a gift to be able to talk about it, because then you don't have to guess. You don't have to
worry about what will happen.
Worry.
I had a situation in my own family. My two cousins. My dad's sister was 90 years old when she passed away. And after she passed away, my two cousins fought for 6 months trying to decide where she should be buried. And to this day, since she was buried, they haven't spoken to each other since. That's the kind of thing that happens when there isn't conversation. And believe me, older people want to have that conversation. Because it's something that's on their mind. It's something that they need to share, but they don't know how to do it. They don't know how to open it up. But it once they're able to share their wishes and desires, it just gives them peace of mind that they know the family understands what they want.
That's so important. So it seems like you have a kind of a dual mission, which I really like. One is helping people themselves talk together about the end of life wishes and plans and issues. And the other is really helping professionals, and I guess particularly financial planners, to try to teach them the skills to help their clients.
Absolutely.
Can you speak a little about what that experience has been like?
Sure.
You do seem unique of having this orientation. And I don't know if you are, but I think you are in terms of financial planners dealing with these issues.
Oh, absolutely. Because when I first retired, most of my speeches were to families. I worked with a number of assisted living facilities and inviting adult children to come to the facility and then talk to them about the plans they need to make for their families and themselves. And then I realized I was a financial advisor for over 30 years. And I have a unique link with advisors because I know what they're going through and what they do. And I've spoken to groups all over the country, and I've learned that most advisors are very capable of learning how to grow clients' investments and how to plan for their retirement. But very few advisors know what to do once a client is retired and has to start dealing with the issues of getting older. They just don't know what to do or who to turn to get that information. So I've spent a lot of my time talking to advisors about what they need to do and how they need to do it, because they're just not prepared. Specifically, I've been speaking recently to advisors about what they do and what they need to do if they've discovered that one of their clients has diminished mental capacity, because this is going to become an increasingly difficult situation for a number of advisors when they discover that a client's mind is slipping away. How do they deal with them from that point forward? So I wrote an ebook specifically on that issue, and I've been talking to advisor groups very specifically about that issue, because I've discovered that none of them have a protocol or a plan. And many of them have run into situations where clients have started to slip, but they don't know how to deal with it. So these are issues that advisors need to start to contend with, because in our population today, the fastest growing age group are the people over age 85. That's percentage-wise. But unfortunately, the Alzheimer's Association has determined and predicted that 46% of those people will have some form of dementia. That's a lot of people. And it's projected that 10 million baby boomers will have Alzheimer's. And so how do advisors learn how to deal with these situations and work with the families. It's going to be increasingly important.
It is. I remember with one of the ASA conferences, actually, that I went to, Ken Dykewald, who's one of the gurus in the aging world, said to everybody of us in the room listening to him talk, he said, look around. Among all of you in the room, one out of every two is going to end up having some form of diminished mental capacity. It was quite startling, but it's part of the reality. So what about in families? One thing I hear you saying, which is important, is maybe for people to keep in mind that the financial planner, that you can ask questions and, in a sense, try to educate the financial planner that you're working with and maybe work with them to help you and your family talk about this. But what about in families, too? What if family members are discovering sort of the slipping of some mental capacity or worrying about it, or if the adult children or cousins or whatever? What's your advice for people in their own families on what to do?
The most powerful tool that I observed and used myself was the family meeting. And I think more and more families will learn how valuable this is. And this is a meeting that hopefully will occur before mom and dad have any issues with diminished capacity. But I've been, again, talking to financial advisors about how valuable they can be to become the facilitator of a family meeting. Because number one, they'll get to know the entire family, which they may not know. And number two, they'll give the family an opportunity to talk about things that they've never talked about before. When most families get together, let's say for Thanksgiving, for example, what do they talk about? They talk about the sports teams and who's playing that day and how John's job is doing and how the grandchildren are doing in school. But no one ever talks about serious issues. It just doesn't happen. But when you get the family together in an organized fashion and have an agenda with a facilitator, it creates incredible breakthroughs for the family in communication and talking about the things that are really important, because these are things that they want to share, but they just don't know how to share them. I did a family meeting one time with an older client of mine who was a retired doctor who clearly was starting to show some limits to his mental capacity. And his wife, who was his third wife, was having some real problems dealing with him. And his children from his second marriage were very upset with her as to why she was so hard on him and was so stern with him, until we had a family meeting. And when we got together and had the family meeting, the children all discovered what was going on. He was getting phone calls almost daily from these scam organizations outside the United States that were telling him that he had won the lottery and that he needed to give them his financial information in order for them to be able to send him the money. And he was just passing out his financial information over the phone to these groups that he had no idea who they were. And then the children began to understand why his wife was having such difficulties with him. And at that point, they offered to participate and to help and to work with his wife to take a little bit of the pressure off of her. But lots of times, no one has really kept in touch with the aging parent to really get to know what their life is like right now. I do a lot of work with a group called Cape Mediation here on the Cape, and we do mediations for families with elders. And oftentimes, the children are 6,000 miles away, and they don't get to see their aging parents but maybe once or twice a year. And a lot happens between the times that they get together and they suddenly discover that mom or dad are having some serious problems and they need to deal with them now. And that happens in a family meeting, and the family can get together and discuss what do we need to do as a family to protect mom or to protect dad.
And is it sometimes one of the adult children that might initiate saying we need to have a family meeting?
In my book, I discuss the value of what we call the alpha child. Excuse me. The alpha child is the family champion, the child who is considered to be successful, can communicate with everyone in the family, has mom and dad's faith and trust. He or she is the person that has the influence with other family members to get them together. So it's critical for the facilitator, and as I mentioned, hopefully that's the financial advisor, it's critical for the facilitator to get to know the alpha child early on and help them become helpful in the process, because the alpha child will make the event happen. And they will talk to their siblings about how important it is to get together and have this meeting with mom and dad. If you look in your own family and see who's the alpha child in your family, and it'll be very interesting for you to take a look at that. I'm an only child. I assumed that since I'm an only child, that I must be the alpha child. Got together with my mom, and this was when we were moving her up to Cape Cod, to talk to her about it was important that she move to be closer to where we lived. And I went through my whole litany about how important it was and the reasons for that. And then at the end, I stopped and looked at her, and she looked at me with a kind of puzzled look on her face and said to me, "What does Mary think?" I said, "What do you mean, what does Mary think?" She said, "What does your wife Mary think?" And I realized and discovered at that point that even though I was the only child in my family, my wife was the alpha child for our family. She was the one that my mother would listen to. She could communicate with my mother, and in fact, she did, and helped my mother make the move up to be close to where we lived. But that's a key person example. In the family.
Yeah. Well, I have a question from Loretta, who's in Denver. And I'll tell you a little of what she said in the background of it, but then the specific question. But she says she's the youngest of nine, and her 94-year-old mother has always wanted to be at home for as long as possible. And she cared for her husband through 14 years of Alzheimer's. However, she broke a hip at Christmas time and now needs 24/7 companion, not skilled nursing, but she's scared to be alone. And after some pretty emotional meetings, she said they decided to move their mother to Denver, where four of the nine live. And that was three weeks ago, and they're waiting to see if it's going to work. The two questions that go with that is, how often do you recommend to continue to have these meetings? And what do you do when there are many alphas in the family?
I don't know if there's many, but perhaps when I spoke to a person who was a second family, in other words, dad had one family and then he passed away, and then mom got married again, and there are second children in the second group, that there were two alpha children in that family, one from the first group and the other from the second group. But I don't think there can really be more than one alpha child. You got to look to who's the one that has the most influence and that people respect in the family and look to for guidance. And who does mom look to for guidance? I think that's the critical question. Which one of the children in the family does she look to for advice? That's the child that can have the greatest impact on her. Making a move is very difficult. It was very difficult moving my mother, because she had always told me, "I don't want to live in an assisted living facility." She kept telling me that over and over again. But then when she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's and she was starting to lose her ability to do a number of things, we knew that she had to be in an assisted living facility. And I was very nervous about it, and I was afraid that it was going to upset her and she was never talk to me again. But my wife said, "We've got to do it." And she was tough, and she was absolutely right. Again, acting as the alpha child. And when my mom got in her new assisted living facility, I made a big mistake in that I started visiting with her every day. And that was not a good idea, because every time I came to see her, she associated me with her previous life and living in her home, and started asking me when she could go home. The folks from Harbor Point, where she lived, told me, stay away for a few weeks. Let her get acclimated and accustomed to being here. And that's what I did. And as a result of that, she started to make friends there. She started to get to know the aides. She worked into the routine of the place and really started to really love it there. It's often very difficult to make that move. And sometimes you just have to do that for their benefit as well as your benefit. Because if they don't make the move, what's going to happen if they get injured or sick and they're at home alone? You just don't know what's going to happen.
I think the hard part, too, as I'm hearing you say this, is many people on the call, or some people on the call, still do have parents. As Loretta was saying, her mother's 94. Many people on the call, other people on the call, have lost their parents and probably have lost many people of that generation of their parents. And so they right. are, there's no buffer anymore. So they're the older generation. So it's really
right.
their kids having maybe these concerns about them of, oh my gosh. Go ahead.
That's what I discovered after my book had been out a while and I'd been speaking to groups. Some of the people who had read the first book and had aging parents came to me and said, I think I've got everything figured out with my parents, but what do I tell my children? What do they need to know? What do I need to do? Because here we are, I'm on the front edge of the boomer generation, born in 1946, and all of a sudden I'm discovering I'm the aging parent. And I don't know, I'm not so comfortable with that, but I do realize that I have a responsibility to my family to communicate and share what I want and what I plan to do. Fidelity did a study on retirees and discovered that only 25% of people who retire share with their children what their retirement plans are. They don't share it. They don't tell them. And the children don't know. And the children have to guess. And also the children have to guess as to whether or not their parents are going to be okay and okay financially. They don't know. And we, as the aging parent, need to share this information with our children so that they can relax and we can relax and share these concerns with them directly rather than keep it quiet. Because certainly money is the most difficult thing for families to talk about. They just don't want to bring it up, especially my parents' generation who grew up in the Depression. Money was the last thing we would talk about. We would never talk about money in the family because it was taboo, and they just didn't do it.
Absolutely. So how do you, if you can speak more about this, because I think probably many listeners are in that situation of realizing, we all realize we are of that age now. And it does speak really the importance of having the dialogue with a financial planner, because I do agree a financial planner has a very unique role with a family. But so can you speak a little bit more about what are the different issues that you think it's important to share with your adult children? You're saying the financial plan, the money.
Yeah. Well,
inheritance,
the first thing
things that, too, just whatever. I don't want to lead that.
The first thing that needs to happen before we do and make any discussions with our children, we need to get our financial house in order. And I talked about this in my second book. And I think there's an offer on the screen for people who want to get my life folio. I'd be happy to send it to them. It's a tool, a 36-page document that asks you a lot of questions about where everything is and what everything is. And that's the first step. You need to get your financial house in order. If you have life insurance policies, where are the policies? And who's the beneficiary? Who's the owner? And I can remember inviting a client into my office and telling him, I'd like to have you come in and let's just check your life insurance policies to make sure everything is okay. And he said to me, what do we need to do that for? They're okay. They're all right. So I said, just bring them in. And he brought them in. And I was reviewing his policies. And I looked at one. And I said, who's Donna? He said, Donna's my ex-wife. And I said, you realize that Donna is still the beneficiary of a $100,000 life insurance policy you have. What would your current wife think about that? And that's the kind of thing that happens. I've seen situations where clients still have the beneficiary of their parents who've been dead for 10 years. You need to get the insurance together. You need to get your legal documents together and review your legal documents to see what the provisions are. And if you still agree with those, who's your executor or executrix? Because that person is the person that's going to deal with your children regarding the settling of your estate. Is that someone that you're comfortable with sharing that information with your children? And another area that's become increasingly important is digital estate planning.
Right.
I started to look at, I looked on my Kindle the other day, and I've got 40 or 50 books on my Kindle that I paid for. And that's a valuable asset. And as we progress, more and more of us are going to have more assets that are digital, whether it be music or rewards points or books or whatever. And we need, first of all, we need to make a list of all our internet accounts and indicate what the username and password is for each, what the address is for each, and who we wish to name as the beneficiary for that asset. Because there is no provision in federal law right now for the distribution of digital assets. There are four or five states that have done some things regarding email, but no federal legislation yet as to what happens to your digital assets when you die. And so as part of my life folio, I have a list of your digital assets. Make a list of those assets, because that's going to be important someday. So once you get everything together and you have all your financial information together, then I think it's important to talk to your alpha child and tell them how important it is to you to share your information with your family. And it's important that they help you make that meeting happen. And in the meeting itself, there are really four areas that need to be discussed in the family meeting. The first of all is the one that I mentioned already, leaving a legacy. What are the stories we want to share with our family? The stories that were important that our family has formed around. What are the traditions in our family? What do we believe in, whether they be religious or otherwise? What things did we learn from life, our successes and our failures, and how we want to be remembered? That's the first part of the family meeting. Then we get into the legal issues. And it's not necessarily getting specifically into legal documents, but knowing who's responsible for legal documents. For example, each of us should have what's called a durable power of attorney. And that gives another person financial authority to act on our behalf. And if I'm not able to sign my name in my checkbook, then the person who has a durable power of attorney can do that. So it can be my spouse if she has a durable power. But if both of us have a problem, it needs to be a third person. And that third person can either be a family member, our friend, or advisor. But that needs to happen. So we in the family meeting have to share with our family as to who has that authority, who has that power to act on our behalf. And I recommend strongly that it not be more than one person, that one person have that authority and that they have a successor if they're not able to do it. But you don't want two of your children with a durable power, because they could end up fighting each other as to what should happen and what should be paid, what shouldn't be paid. One should have the authority and another could be the successor. And another critical issue is what you mentioned, Dori, already, is the healthcare proxy. Mm-hmm. Who's the person in the family that's going to make decisions for you regarding your health if you're not able to make them yourself? And that person needs to know what your wishes are. So it's important for you to share your living will with that person so they know under what circumstances you want to be kept alive and what circumstances you don't. And it's a very important position. I can remember being in the hospital when a very good friend of mine from high school had a stroke and was in a coma, and the neurosurgeon came out of his room and approached my client, my friend's wife directly and said to her, "You've got 5 minutes to make a decision. Do you want to have me operate and save his life? And we don't know if he will be recovered or be a vegetable. Or do you just want me to let him die?" So she had to make that decision in 5 minutes as his durable healthcare proxy. And those are the kinds of things that may happen in the family. So that area is very important as part of the legal area. The third area is healthcare. There's really three basic questions that mom and dad need to share with their children regarding healthcare. First is, if my wife or I need long-term care, will we be able to stay in our home? Can we continue to live there? Is it too difficult or limiting because of stairs or our narrow hallways? Is it too difficult for us to live there? And if one of us needs care, where should we live? Where are we going to live? That's question number one. Question number two is, if one of us needs care, who's going to take care of us? Is it going to be my daughter-in-law, or is it going to be a person that we bring in to take care of us? Or who do we ask to be the caregiver, or how do we receive care? I remember speaking to one of my wife's friends, and she had just finished reading my book, and she said, "I know who's going to take care of me, my son." I said, "Oh, okay. Where's your son live?" And she lives on Cape Cod, and my son lives in Chicago. "Oh, okay. What's his situation?" "He's married, and he's got two children. One is 5 and one is 2. "Oh, all right. And have you talked to him about the fact that he's going to have to be taking care of you?" "No, we haven't talked about it, but I'm sure he'd do it." But see, she's setting up a situation that is not going to work, that she's expecting him to provide care for her, and she hasn't even talked to him about it. That's question number two. And the third question is, if we need long-term care, how are we going to pay for it? Because there aren't a lot of available sources to pay for care, for custodial care. A lot of people think Medicare will take care of it. Unfortunately, Medicare only covers rehabilitation. It does not cover a custodial situation, taking care of someone. So Medicare is out. And then Medicaid is the second option. And Medicaid is only available if we've used up all of our assets and we're down to about $2,000. That's it. And most situations, you don't want to end up there, because also under Medicaid, you need to go into a nursing home. And most people don't want to go into a nursing home. The third option are veterans benefits. And there is a particular benefit called the aid in attendance benefit that is for veterans who have served during a time of war, can get a benefit of up to $2,000 a month to pay for their care. And it's a difficult process with a long application, but it's worth looking into for veterans. And the fourth option, and the one that I've supported throughout my career and working with a number of my clients, is long-term care insurance. It is the only source of income for someone who wants to stay at home and needs care, or wants to be in assisted living, or any situation, long-term care insurance will pay for it. But you have to buy it when you're healthy. And generally speaking, I suggest most people look at it at least by age 50 and consider it. And some people will say, "Gee, it's so expensive." It may, let's say that the coverage costs $5,000 a year for you and your spouse. What would 1 month in an assisted living facility cost? About, in my neck of the woods, between $5,000 to $8,000 a month. Your premium that you pay for that coverage we'd be used up with 1 month of care in an assisted living facility. So those are the questions regarding healthcare. And the fourth area is financial. And really the only question that the children need to know in finance is, can we support ourselves? Can mom and dad support themselves? Are they financially capable of taking care of themselves? And that's really all the children want to know. They don't need to know what the inheritance is going to be and what they're going to get, because it's, and generally speaking, it's not that important to them. What is important to them is that mom and dad can take care of themselves and they're not going to have to help. Merrill Lynch did a study called The Elephant in the Room, and they discovered that 60% of baby boomers have become the family bank. In other words, they're either paying their elderly parents or they're paying their adult children to provide them with living funds. And too many boomers have adult children who have come back home and are in that situation where they've got aging parents who may have difficulties and they've got adult children who have difficulties. Many boomers are facing some difficult times ahead, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the sandwich generation, or somebody, yes, on one of my calls, I remember, called it the squeeze generation, and I think that's right. Pretty accurate.
Yeah. Right. I had one woman at one of my talks. After the talk, she approached me. She had a very worried look on her face, very serious, and she said, "Baba, I've got a boy in the seventh grade who has a learning disability, and I have to spend time with him every night helping him with his homework, and it's not easy. And I've got a full-time job. I'm working hard and I'm doing well, but it's a full day. And I just got a call 2 weeks ago from my two brothers who told me that mom really can't live alone anymore. She's going to have to come live with you." And that was and unfortunately, it's the daughter or the daughter-in-law who gets that job. Two-thirds of the caregivers in this country are women. And half of those women are working full-time and providing care to a family member, which is a very difficult thing to do. And they really deserve awards for doing that.
And it can create all kinds of issues and all in families, too. I mean, in my work with couples, the communication among the couple is crucial, too, in addition to the communication with parents, if they're still alive, or siblings or whomever, as well as your offspring or whoever is important in your life. Life could get very complicated. So I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
People want to know a little more about this alpha child situation. So
yes.
Ron from Colorado describes his situation and has a question. He said that his wife and he are 60 and 70 years old respectively, and both are still working and very healthy. And they have four children, including a son who's 25 and three daughters who are 27, 31, and 33. Their son has a college degree to be a commercial pilot, but needs many more flight hours to be hired. The older daughter still lives with them and is working or improving her life since she's been separated for 2 years. The middle daughter's divorced and has an 11-year-old son. The youngest daughter has a college degree in counseling, but isn't comfortable with family discussions. He says, "I'm not sure any of them would be willing to take on the quote alpha role in a discussion of my wife and my plans for retirement and health issues. How do we?"
That's interesting. That's very interesting. There's some really interesting dynamics in that family. But
pretty typical of a lot of families, I think. So.
Yeah, there's all different options and variations within families, which creates the interesting interaction of families. But one of them stands out when it comes time to talk about things that are important and has mom and dad's ear. If this person were to think which one of their children comes to them with concerns about them and asks questions about their future and what's going on, is there one of the children who's taken on that responsibility? And I think you'll find that one of them stands out in that group. Because I know when I work with families, oftentimes it's the alpha child that comes to me first, and not mom and dad, who says, we need to get together and talk about these issues because dad is failing and mom is very nervous. And the alpha child will be the one that creates the meeting. So if you were to look carefully in the family and see who is it that stands out, that is willing to take on responsibility and is solid. It may not be easy at first, but think about it and think about who it is that is most concerned about your welfare.
Have you ever had any families where no one has stepped up to the plate, or that it just
they're not necessarily they may not necessarily be willing to step up to the plate, but they are in a powerful position, and it's in my case as a financial advisor, it was my job to approach that alpha child and said, you need to do something here because your parents are having some difficulties. And once they recognize that and acknowledge that, if they're a responsible human being, they'll take it on. But they may not just jump up and say, okay, I'll do this. You need to approach them and ask them, here's the situation. Here's what I think that you need to do. It doesn't require them to do a lot. It just requires them to be in a role where they support their parents and support them in getting the rest of the family together. And that's really all they have to do.
Can you speak a little more to that? Because it ties in, I think, to Kathleen from Vermont's question, which is, can you really define the alpha child? And what happens if there's too much pressure on this person to move the family forward? And I think you're starting to speak to that, but maybe you can elaborate.
It's really, and one of the things I found out, I worked with a family that had four adult children, and mom and dad in their 80s, and their mom and dad were starting to fail. And the oldest son, who was the alpha child, was the one that called me and asked me if we could arrange for this meeting. And part of the facilitator's job is to communicate with each one of the family members before the meeting and just find out where they are and what their concerns are and what their issues are, and talk to them and create a relationship with them. And the oldest son, the alpha child, said to me, first of all, he said, we should probably invite my sister, but I don't think she's going to have much to contribute. She's had some drug issues in the past. She's had some problems, and I don't know if she'll contribute much. And my two other brothers, it'll be good to get them involved, but I'm not sure what's going to happen. And then as I talked to each one of the children, the youngest son said to me, oh, my older brother, and he was referring to the alpha child, he's going to dominate the conversation. He's going to tell us all what to do, and that'll be the end of it. That'll be the end of our meeting. But when they all got together, some surprising results occurred. It was this youngest son who was the one who said that his brother was going to dominate the conversation. It was the youngest son who stepped forward and said, this meeting is not about telling mom and dad what to do. This meeting is supporting them and helping them discover what it is that they want. And he really guided the whole meeting. And the alpha child, the one that we thought was going to dominate the meeting, just sat back and supported him. You just never know what's going to happen within the family. And you don't want to put the burden on the alpha child to have to run the meeting. That's a mistake, because they want to participate just like everyone else. That's why I suggest strongly that you have an outside person become the facilitator, because they take on all responsibility of getting the meeting together, getting the agenda done, and getting the follow through. The alpha child's only role is to support his siblings in getting together. That's it. Doesn't need to do any more than that, because things will evolve in the meeting with the family. And sometimes you're very surprised as to how things evolve and who becomes the leader in the meeting and what happens. In this case, it was the youngest of the four children. And each one of them, even including the daughter who had some, she was a strong force in bringing everyone together. And her role was insignificant. It was not as insignificant as her brother had thought. You just don't know what's going to happen until the meeting occurs. But it all needs to happen within a context of love and compassion, because this is not going to be a meeting about who did what wrong and who's responsible and finger pointing and correcting all the things that happened in the past 30, 40 years ago. This is about supporting mom and dad and what they need and what they want and how we can do that. And if the meeting is completed in that context, it can be very successful.
So what happens if you want to have the meeting and you don't necessarily have a financial planner that's of the able to do something like this? How might you go about finding someone to help facilitate it? Because you're really suggesting that it's good to have an outside facilitator.
Yeah, I really, because you don't want somebody who's emotionally involved in the conversation to direct and guide, because there has to be some decisions made in the meeting as to what happens. And someone who's emotionally involved may take one side or the other as to what should happen. It should be someone who's not emotionally involved. It could be a religious leader. It could be your rabbi, your minister. Or there, here on the Cape, as I mentioned, there are organizations that do mediations and deal with situations with families. And I know throughout Massachusetts, there are other organizations that provide these types of services to families to facilitate meetings. There are facilitators that are available. And I would just search, I would Google under the word mediation and find out and give them a call to see who is in your community that has facilitated meetings and to guide the family in having a family meeting, because it's important that they be independent and not emotionally attached to it, to the outcome of the meeting, because that doesn't work if they do.
Mm-hmm. And as you say that, I realize that I actually am my Boomers and Beyond special interest group. I did have somebody speak, and it's reminded me that I'm going to invite somebody who's an elder mediator to come to one of these, because I think that would be really helpful for people.
Yes, very helpful, because that's a very specific skill, and it gets involved in some very difficult situations. Elder mediators have a difficult role.
Yeah, I know I did some training with the elder mediation, and I'm so impressed with the group around here, and they do training around the country. So it does sound like you're trying to do a lot of training with financial advisors to try to get them on board to become elder.
Yeah, I'm thinking now about the possibility. We do trainings on the Cape for mediation in general. We have a very good training team here on the Cape that does mediation training. But I'm thinking about organizing a training specifically for facilitators of family meetings, because I think this could be a valuable skill that a number of advisors could use in their community. So that's on my agenda for this
Sounds
year.
Like it would be a really helpful, because it does sound like the family meeting is really a core part of what you think is essential. And is it
Absolutely.
A one-time meeting? It ties into Loretta's question.
It can be one time, but as I read a great little book called Wealth and Families by Charles Collier from Harvard, who talked about the transfer of wealth between generations. And basically, he said that 70% of families transferring wealth within generations fail. Only 30% of families are successful in transferring wealth and the children taking on the role of responsibility when they have substantial wealth. And he talks about the importance of an annual family meeting for the family to discuss and determine what its mission is. As families accumulate more, the family meeting becomes more and more important, especially if there is ongoing wealth within the family that needs to be carried from one generation to the next. These family members need to take on that responsibility. Charles Collier talks about how valuable an annual family meeting is to discuss what the family's mission is, what they want to do with their money, where they want to contribute it, and how they want to make a difference. And it's extremely valuable stuff because, unfortunately, most families never talk about this. They never talk about what the family wealth is about. All they're really concerned about is whether or not their kids are going to squander their money and spend it all on fancy cars and so on. But they don't talk about what their mission is and what the family's mission is. But I think as families accumulate more, the family meeting should become an annual event. And for some families, it may only happen once, but I think they'll find out that after they have that initial meeting, they'll want to do it again. They'll want to do it on a more than one-time basis. But it doesn't have to be done every year, but it certainly is beneficial if it's done more than once.
I also want to say that Bob had sent me a copy of the digital estate and the
successful family
what you
meeting.
Call it. And the Life Folio system and successful media. And it's really excellent. He covers so many things. And it is very helpful to have everything together, passwords, usernames. I think we don't always think about, and I must say when you were talking about the digital estate, I know passwords and stuff like that. I wasn't even thinking about my Kindle and stuff like that.
Right.
Part of asset. It's really interesting to think about that. But
valuable.
I want... Really, and it's amazing.
So just request the Life Folio, and I'd be happy to send it out to you. And I hope that you use it. And I suggest that you fill it out for yourself first, because it'll ask you to write down all the critical information that you need to keep in one place. And then share it with other people that you work with and ask them to do it too, because the more people who are able to get this information together, I think the more people will be happy that they've done it. And I did also give a handout on, as you mentioned, the digital state, and also a one-page on successful family meetings, how to have a successful family meeting. I list the 8 steps that are necessary to have a successful family meeting, and that's something that's available to them off your website.
That's great. So everybody should know that. And so I have a question to ask, and then we'll see if any other questions come in. But do you, when you have these family meetings, this is that hard question, but the darker side of it, are you able sometimes through the family meeting to discover if there's some elder abuse going on? Because I know there's so much written about that now, and I just...
Yeah, that's a very good question. That's something we have to be very careful of today, because most elder abuse is not done by some unknown stranger, but it's often done by someone close to the elder, either a caregiver or a family member or someone that knows them well. And we put together a task force in Massachusetts with the Financial Planning Association as to how to deal with elder abuse. And the first thing you need to be conscious of, is there a new person in your elder's life that was never there before, but all of a sudden is asking questions about financial information and so forth? Who is the person that has the durable power of attorney for the elder? And has the elder begun to take out large amounts of money out of their either savings or investment accounts? And be conscious of these, because oftentimes they won't share it with you because they might feel that they don't want you to know about what they're doing. But you need to be conscious of that. And if you feel that there is some abuse occurring in your state, and in Massachusetts, there is Protective Services. It's a state organization that you can contact and anonymously make a statement that there may be some problems within a certain family. And then if, in fact, there is evidence that there is abuse, that family will be investigated by Protective Services, and they'll do an investigation of the family situation. So it's very important to be conscious of that. There's no specific federal laws at this point, but the number of the financial institutions are looking at potential regulation regarding sharing of information regarding elder abuse. But it's a big problem, and we all need to be conscious of it with our families.
Thanks. I just wanted to, I was thinking about it and didn't want to end the conversation without something about it. But I want to get back a little to something that you were saying at the beginning, or something I think maybe that I read in your book, of that kind of one of the big issues that people face is really trying to figure out how to have control of their life and to stay in control of their life. And it does seem to me that your book is such a helpful way to help people try to do that. And this family meeting is a way, too, of being able to talk about it. So I just wanted, if you could talk a little bit more about that before you leave.
Yeah, because there are always specific concerns that we have that concern us regarding control in our lives. I remember a family meeting I did with a group. I thought I was making a lot of progress in the meeting when I noticed that mom, the elder mother, was getting increasingly agitated and concerned. And I asked her what her problem was. And she said, I have these beautiful collections. I have these collections of these posters from Hollywood. I have these collections of ivory. And I'm just afraid of what's going to happen when I'm gone as to how this is distributed in the family. And my husband's family, his sister, when his mother died, his sister came in and just cleaned out the house. And he hasn't spoken to his sister since. And I don't want that to happen in my family. What we discovered and what we decided to do was for her to make a list of all the important articles that she had, all the important things that were valuable, and share that list with each of the children and ask them to write down what was most important to them, what they felt that they would like to have, and to share their list back with mom. And then she would decide based upon that as to who got what. And it solved the problem for her. It no longer did she expect that there was going to be this mad rush for her stuff. So this was a way that she was able to maintain control in her life. And another concern for her and her husband was that her children were going to move her out of their beautiful home into a condominium. But as we discovered, as the children became aware that they could develop a plan that mom and dad could stay where they were, because one of the kids would be responsible for taking care of the yard and the landscape, and one of the kids would be responsible for helping them get an aide in the house. And these types of things could be handled for mom and dad so that they could maintain control of their lives. So it's important to find out what's most important to them and find ways that you can help them solve that problem without having to make major changes in their lives. You may have to. There are situations where dad shouldn't be driving anymore, and someone's got to face up to that. Dad can't drive, and because he may have a serious accident and hurt someone. So sometimes some of that control has to be taken away if it's dangerous. And likewise, too, that if mom and dad are in a home that is very difficult to maneuver, at some point someone has to make the decision that they can't stay there any longer because they may fall or get hurt. And that's when the children become the parent, and that's not easy. And you see that happen. It's not easy for children to take that role and to be that forceful. But in some cases, they have to do that because it's in their interest for their own children. I'm sorry, their own parents.
It can get very complicated, but what you're saying is it's so important to have eyes wide open and with that optimistic realism, but being realistic of what...
That's a good term, optimistic realism. But you do have to be realistic, and they have to face up to it sometimes, and it's not easy. It's not easy to do, but it's sometimes in their own best interest.
No, I think that's true. What final takeaway? I know you're going to luckily be back with us so we can talk in more depth, but what would be a final takeaway or comment that you'd like to leave the listeners with right now before we end for today?
It's the same comment I leave whenever I speak to groups, is that the most valuable gift that you can give your family, greater than any money or any financial goals, the greatest gift that you can give your family is the gift of communication, sharing with them what's important to you and receiving what's important to them. That gift will serve you better than anything else that you can do. So you need to think about in your own life, who do I need to communicate with? And when am I going to do it? Because once you do, you've given them the greatest gift that they will ever have. And that's, I think that's my most important comment.
That's very well said. And it ties into your website, which is.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I'm all about. All right. That's what I've determined. My goal is now that I'm retired is to make people realize and be aware of that. Because sometimes it's very difficult to communicate. Mm-hmm. And it's a barrier. But once you get over that barrier, it's relief and you're peaceful. You've said what you need to say and you've shared things you needed to share. And oftentimes you'll discover that it didn't turn out as nearly as bad as you thought it would. That things actually worked out.
And actually it brings people often closer together. I'm such a believer in the communication also. And
It brings families together.
It really does. And I think you're absolutely right. It is a gift. And I think that by thinking about it that way, it may help empower people to say, now's
yes.
the time. If
I'll take
said,
the
if
lead.
Not now, when? Yeah.
Exactly. Right. When is the best time? And just a quick story. I for years and years, I had never told my father that I loved him. And I finally decided that, because he was a very quiet and very kept his emotions to himself, but I finally decided I was going to tell him that I loved him. And it took me weeks to figure out when is the best time. When should I do it? When should I tell him? And we were visiting with my mom and dad in their home. And I was the whole time I was there. Should I say it now? Should I say it now? Should I say it now? And I waited until just the moment we were leaving the house. And I turned around as I was leaving out of the house and gave him a big hug and said, I love you, Dad. He didn't know what to do. My father looked at the floor and his response was, me too. But just having said that, from that moment on, every time I met him, every time I saw him, I told him I loved him. And we broke down a barrier and we were able to communicate at a much higher level from that point on, from that day on.
That's a wonderful story.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here and sharing so much. So thanks again and take care. And
thank you, Dori. Thank you for this opportunity. I really enjoyed talking to your audience. It's been a real pleasure. Thanks again.
Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Revolutionize Your Retirement Radio with Dr. Dorian Mintzer. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show, listen to past episodes, or download our free retirement transition guide, visit revolutionizeyourretirementradio.com.